You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
It's him. He's alive.
Okay, now joining us is former Steelers, Jaguars, and Browns running back George Jones. Let me give you some more background on George. He's from Greenville, South Carolina. He played his college ball first at Baker Junior College and then at San Diego State. He set the national record for junior college in rushing yards with 1,567 yards, and he broke O.J. Simpson's junior college touchdown mark with 34. At San Diego State, he still ranks eighth all-time in rushing yards. For his college career, he averaged, folks, 5.8 yards per carry. He scored 34 rushing touchdowns at San Diego State, which is tied for fifth all-time. He had the most yards ever in a game by a junior when he rushed for 270 yards against Fresno State in 1995. He has the fourth most rushing yards in a season with 1,842 in 1995. But at that time, he broke San Diego State's single-season rushing record that was held by Marshall Faulk. He broke that rushing record with a game to spare and ended up breaking Faulk's record by 212 yards. That season, he carried the ball 305 times and had 23 touchdowns, averaged 6 yards per carry that year, plus he had 3 200-yard-plus rushing games. And he had 5 rushing touchdowns in a game twice during his time at San Diego State as well. He was a 5th-round draft choice by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1997. He played in the league from 1997 to 1999, 1 year each with the Steelers, Jags, and Browns. And we're excited to have him with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, George, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be on with you guys.
George, and happy belated birthday. George's birthday is on New Year's Eve, so happy belated birthday to you.
Thank you, sir. Just turned 48 years old, and I feel good.
There you go.
Great to hear.
George, I want to start by going back to early on in your life, and I read that you did have a father figure and really didn't have much parental support growing up. Talk about your life leading up to the time when you left Greenville and flew across the country to go play at Bakersfield College.
Well, I befriended a guy by the name of Nathan Broom in the 7th grade in 1987. And at that time, that was the first time I had ever been around going over to somebody's house that didn't look like me. I was a bit nervous about going over there, but it was the best decision I ever made in my life. And that point, going into my 8th grade year, his dad, who ended up being my dad now, his name is Monty Broom, he ended up helping me to play with a team called the Eastside Dolphins, which is the team that comprised of all different races. And at that time, that was my first time ever playing with kids that didn't look like me. So fast forward, going into high school, like you said, I grew up without a father. I lived in Woodland Homes Project in Greenville, South Carolina. My 10th grade year in high school, we got kicked out of our apartment. So my last 2 years of high school, I just bounced around at a couple friends' house and end up staying there my last 2 years of high school. So not having the proper support at home with parents and the proper guidance, I didn't do well in school. So I couldn't go anywhere going out of high school. So it was a friend on our team named James Pugh. His dad, Mr. Pugh, had a connection out to Bakersfield Community College in Bakersfield, California. And at that time, I had never left the state of South Carolina or the city of Greenville. But Monty, Nathan's dad, who I met as a 13-year-old, told me it was the best thing for me to do was to go out there and, you know, this will probably change my life. At that time, I was pretty unsure about that. I had never flown, never went across the country, so I didn't really want to go. But Monty told me, George, I bought you the ticket. You're going to go. So I end up flying out there in June or July of 1993, and the rest is history. From that point, once I got out there, I knew I had to make it, because growing up where I grew up, you know, everybody always said you were never going to be good, you're not a good football player, you're never going to become anything. So I kept all that in the back of my mind when I went out there. And I said, hey, I'm going to literally down this football field if I have to. So I'm going to make it. So once I got out there and coach Carl Bowser, who's the head coach, 2 years I was out there in 1993 and 1994, he was one of the greatest coaches I ever had. He believed in me at, you know, like no other coach had ever believed in me at that point. And at that point, my football career took off. I mean, I had, for my freshman through my sophomore year, I would say I was an average player my freshman year at Bakersfield. And I remember going home that summer and Coach Bowser telling me, George, if you go and you come back and you show me the kind of dedication and the shape to be in, we will run the offense through you. So I went home, trained, come back. Coach Bowser kept his word. And then my sophomore year, I broke, you know, the national record for touchdowns, 34 in 10 games. I carried the ball, I think, 175 times for like 1600 yards. I averaged a first down every time I touched the ball, basically. And so from that point, I had my pick of the litter where I, but the head coach at Bakersfield, he was really good friends with Coach Ted Toner at San Diego State. I didn't really want to go to San Diego State, but I had remember seeing Marshall Faulk at that time, who had just left from San Diego State. I seen him at Indianapolis Colts on TV. And I was like, man, they just kept talking about him. And at that time, that year, I think he won Rookie of the Year for the NFL at the Indianapolis Colts. So Coach Bowser convinced me to go down to San Diego State and take a visit. I did it. I went down. I took the visit. And Marshall was there, and also Ricky Wayne, who ended up going to the University of Texas. He's from San Diego. He was there. So during that time, on the visit, Marshall, you know, told me, he said, George, you probably don't want to come here because you don't want to have to follow in my footsteps. So that's all I needed to hear. I got back to Bakersfield like that, you know, that Sunday, and then I told them I was coming, and I told Marshall I'm going to break his records, and that's what ended up happening.
So, George, and that's an unbelievably inspiring story for how you got from where you were to getting out to San Diego State and the great things that you accomplished there. Now, I also read, as amazing as your 1995 season was at San Diego State, I read that you played a lot of that season with a broken jaw and your mouth wired shut. Is that accurate?
That is correct. So, we were playing a game, I think, against New Mexico, and I broke my jaw in the second quarter. And I come out of the game, and the trainer, head trainer at the time, Gary Johnson, told me my jaw was broken. He said, George, you can continue to play or you can come out. But at that time, again, Chris and Bob, in the back of my mind, I remember everything Marshall told me on the visit, that you can't do this, you can't do that. And I was having a good season up to that point where I was nationally ranked either first, second, or third in rushing and in scoring touchdowns and in points. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to play with a broken jaw if I can take the pain. So I continued the game and made it through the game. And that Sunday, I had surgery, and they wired my jaw shut. Then I did like an interview on national television, and they were, you know, saying they didn't know if I was going to be able to play. And I didn't know I was going to be able to play either, because from that Thursday where I weighed in at to that Monday, I think I lost like 15 pounds.
Wow.
I hadn't eaten at all. I couldn't eat. So, I lost like a lot of strength and a lot of weight in like a short period of time. And then I think the next game we was playing Colorado State. And they made this really special helmet for me that had like a big old hockey mask. And they would not give me any pain medication because they said if I took the pain medication, I might break the jaw again and it'll mess my TMJ up for future with speaking. So I went out there with my mouth wired shut. You know, I remember the first time I got hit in the game and I was literally crying like under the pile because the team knew I had my jaw broken, so everybody was just hitting me in the head and while we were on the piles and all that. But it was one of the most painful things that I ever went through. But after that game, it I got used to it because I just kept losing weight. Because at the time, all I was able to digest and drink was like some like formula called Ensure. I don't know if you guys ever heard of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just drinking Ensure, and that was pretty much it. And I mean, I just gutted out those last 5 or 6 games. So, it was a miracle that I even was able to break Marshall record because of the, I lost, you know, those next 4 to 6 weeks. I think I lost about 25 pounds. So, but I was still able to maintain enough to play and, do as well as I did. The only thing I regret about it is that if I hadn't gotten hurt, I'm almost positive I would have rushed the 2,000 yards pretty easily. But, you know, that's, you know, injuries are a part of the game.
And, George, like I mentioned in the stats in your intro, you carried the ball 305 times that season. And doing so with a broken jaw a lot of times. What was the toll on your body as a whole by the time the end of the season came around?
To be honest with you, Bob and Chris, I wasn't hurt at all. I promise you, before I broke my jaw, I used to remember playing a football game, and after the game, I could play another game because I had gotten myself in that kind of tremendous shape to be able to put my body through that toll throughout the season with the weightlifting and all the running. So, I didn't feel any effects of all those carries, to be honest with you. The only effect I had was the broken jaw. Other than that, the hits in the game, they didn't bother me whatsoever. I mean, I felt pretty good after most games.
Bob, questions for George?
Hi, George. It's an honor to have you on the show, and it's just a fascinating journey, yours to the NFL. And, you know, just listening to your story, especially when you were a youth, George, I mean, you know, even I can get emotional because, I mean, I work with kids a lot, and I was just wondering, due to what you went through and everything, do you ever have a chance, or have you had a chance over the years to talk to kids and tell them your story and motivate them? They need it more now than they've ever had.
I would like to do more of it. Again, like I mentioned in the piece, when I was in contact with Chris, I'm currently in the process of writing a book about being a present dad in our kids' life. I would like to do that and let people know my story and let people know that no matter what your background, how hard, how difficult it could be, if you get around the right people that want to help you, you can pretty much accomplish anything. Because again, meeting Nathan and his family, you know, Monty, his mom, Jackie, and his sister Leah, I don't know where my life would have been had I not met that family. I can honestly tell you everything that I got in my lifetime right now with my wife, my kids, all of that. Had I not met Monty Broom, Nathan and his family, and Leah and his mom, Jackie, in 1987, I could promise you I wouldn't be on the phone with you, and I don't know where my life will be right now. So I owe pretty much everything to Monty Broom because he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And again, growing up in the South where I grew up at, I never knew that people who didn't look like you would help you and not want anything from it. So that was just, it just blew me away. And to this day, he's had the most influence on my life as a human being and as a football player. Pretty much everything that I do, if I got anything hard going on in life or I need some advice, I always put it through him and get his wisdom and everything. So I'm tremendously blessed that the good Lord brought him into my life. I would love to talk to kids and help other kids because, again, you know, people, you know, we all need help sometimes, you know, and it's hard, especially as a young person, to ask somebody for help.
And George, the culmination of everything you speak about is being drafted by the Steelers in 1997. Now, you know, again, looking back on what you went through, your journey just to get to that day, take me back to that day when they called your name in the 5th round. I mean, was the family you were speaking about, were they there to share that with you? How emotional was that day for you?
I was in Los Angeles when that happened. with my agent. It was like one of the greatest days in my life. Just think about it. You know, we all as kids, you know, growing up wanting to be an athlete, we all inspired to play, you know, professional football, basketball, baseball, whatever it may be. You hope to do that, but, you know, you never think it will happen. And I was one of those kids who would have never thought that I was just one of the 1% to get my name called by one of the greatest franchises in all of the world. So for me, it was with Coach Cower and all those guys. It was, I mean, it was one of the greatest days ever.
And George, we had Will Blackwell on the show a few years ago, and you guys played together at San Diego State. You played together in Pittsburgh. He was drafted in the third round. Like Bob said, you're in the fifth. Did having him with you and you guys both going to Pittsburgh together, did that make the transition a little easier for you?
Yes, most definitely it did, because before that, we roomed together in college. So it was really easy. Once we both got drafted, we ended up living together out in Pittsburgh. So we went to practice together. We ate together. We did everything pretty much together. So it made it pretty easy to go to Pittsburgh and be able to move around and try to be a professional athlete, and having somebody that you know really well to go through that process with you makes it a lot easier.
And George, speaking of the transition from college to the NFL, I mean, you get drafted by the Steelers and suddenly you're playing in Three River Stadium in front of 60,000 rabid Steeler fans. What was it like being in a stadium like that, that size, the fans going crazy like that? What was that like for you?
I can remember, you know, when it was super cold. And, you know, back then, when the game got really rowdy, they would bang their foot on the stadium and you could hear everything rocking. It just brings chills to you when the stadium was doing that. I mean, I look at it and I talk to buddies all the time about it, about those days in Three River Stadium when we would go out there and practice and it's super cold and things of that nature. I mean, it was the best. Hearing all the fans and waving the yellow towels and all that, it was the best.
And George, speaking of practice, when you show up that first year in Latrobe for your first training camp, I mean, you're going up against some unbelievably good Steeler defenders from the 90s, the Greg Lloyds and Levon Kirkland, Jason Gildon, Earl Holmes, Kevin Henry, Karnelik. I could go on and on about the great players they had on defense. What was it like facing those guys in practice?
So I'm glad you asked that. As you know, being a running back, you go against the linebackers in a lot of drill. So for me, seeing Greg Lloyd and Levon Kirkland, those guys on TV, now I'm facing these guys in practice, having to block them in one-on-one drill. Now, I would say blocking Greg was a little bit easier than trying to block Levon Kirkland, because Levon was a pretty big man when he was playing football. So I can honestly say he took it easy on me when it came to blocking him. Levon Kirkland did. He would tell me what he's going to do, so he didn't try to embarrass me. So I'm pretty happy about that, because he could have just run right over me and embarrassed me in the drills. But he was very professional. And he always tried to give me tips on how to get better at playing the running back position, going against linebackers. So, but it was pretty exciting to go against those guys, because, again, you see it on TV, but when you're there in live, it's just another thing. And some of the guys are bigger in person than they looked on TV, and then some were smaller. So it kind of, you know, threw you off a little bit. But as far as Levon Kirkland, he looked the same size. He was big on TV, and he was big in person. And he was a heck of a player. And those guys were really good to me on the defense, where they, you know, showed me a lot of things about the running back position, along with, you know, Jerome Bettis. I still talk to Jerome to this day. He's like a big brother to me, and he showed me a lot of things about how to be better as a running back, on how to pick the holes and when to speed up, when to slow down, how to read the defense. And Cordell Stewart, he did the same thing. Those guys helped me out a lot. We Yankee Big Ten the same way. So most of those guys, they all did a tremendous job of helping the young guy come in, especially I was the third down starter at running back. So I had to learn how to read complex defenses and also protect Cordell from getting sacked when I came in to sub for Jerome on third down. So it was a great experience, and I'm still friends with a lot of those guys that I talk to this day. So it'll be something that I'll never forget, and I tell my young kids and all the time about all the experiences that I've had with all those guys.
George, before we let you go, and you mentioned your book, and again, the working title is The Present Dad. So let our listeners know, when do you think the book might become available, and then how can we keep up to date with all the great things that you're doing now, whether we're following you online or it's on social media?
Well, my website, thepresentdad.com, the book is scheduled for release on Father's Day. So again, my whole goal out there is help fathers who want to be present in their kids' life and who want to try to be better fathers. That's what I tried to do, and I've gotten a lot of help from a lot of people over the years with trying to be a better father, and all I want to do is pass on what was passed on to me from people like Archie Manning, Monty Broom, Eric Dickerson, guys like that who have helped me to become a better father to my kids, and all I'm trying to do is pass on the advice that was given to me.
Well, George, we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come and be a part of this show. We have certainly enjoyed the time. I hope you'll come back and join us again sometime.
I will come back anytime you guys will have me. And if you have anybody or any groups or anything that you would like for me to speak to kids and all that, you guys have my contact. I'll be more than happy to talk to kids and anybody who is looking for help, any possible thing in life.
We appreciate that very much. George, again, belated happy birthday. Thanks for the time. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks again, George.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Have a good night.
Thank you, George.
All right.
That is George Jones, Bob, a guy that had one of the most incredible college careers. And then for the things that he overcame to get to that point is unbelievable. He's a fascinating guy.
It was a great story, Chris. I mean, I was almost getting choked up just because of the accomplishment of where he was, people telling him, you won't account. I mean, what he even said himself. I mean, I didn't think, I just couldn't get out of high school. I mean, I didn't know where I was going to go. And then for him to have his name called in the draft in 97, it's just an amazing story. And I was right off the bat, I said, this is an inspiring guy. I hope he has some kind of speaking engagements or book in the work. And,
yeah,
and obviously that's the case. So yeah, hopefully we could speak to him again, get more about Marshall Faulk. They very, very similar careers, obviously, in college. Very same size kind of guy, too, Chris. So that interesting story. Great guest.
Yeah, and you want to talk about a guy who personifies the spotlight on the positive, right?
Right.
There's your guy. Speaking of which, we've got our next guest, Tony Collins, in our five-star picks of the week, coming right up on the other side of this real quick station break.